It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Happy Monday. I am Kim Munson. Welcome to the show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletter. Keep you apprised of what's going on. And you can reach me at Kim@KimMunson.com. It is wild out there, and we need to stay calm. It is time to stay calm and carry on. And I think that there has been really a push to foment almost panic among Americans right now. And we need to get settled down here. We are Americans. We are the people that stood against the British during the Revolutionary War and stood against tyranny. You can go to Gettysburg, where blood and treasure was spilled to answer this question, whether or not one human could own another human. And we go to Normandy, Iwo Jima, all of our wars and conflicts. And we stand on the shoulders of giants. So we need to buck up here and settle down a little bit, Steve.
Very well said. I think earlier in the last 2 hours, the show I was listening to made reference to 9/11.
Exactly.
And where were we on 9/12? Okay, we were trying to absorb what was done to us, but everybody wanted to know, what can we do? You know, how do we respond? And we're kind of in similar territory, I think.
Well, I really think that we are. And now I went out to the stores this weekend to pick up some things. There wasn't any toilet paper.
Oh, yes.
And there wasn't any baby wipes, but there was water and bread and things like that. You know, Steve, I just have to ask, what did mankind do for the 4,000 years before toilet paper was invented?
I don't know.
I mean, think about it.
This Monday morning, it's tough enough as it is without questions like that.
Well, in the old days, you know, they used to use corn cobs. I'm thinking that should help the price of corn, you know? Anyway, I mean, we were able to make it for all these years without toilet paper. Mankind seemed to be able to go on. And but this whole panic thing is just, it's just crazy.
Well, we wandered out to the store too on Saturday, and it could have been worse in my mind. But once I got home and tried to absorb it all, I think, you know, I don't fear the medical, biological aspect of all this as much as I do our own culture.
Well,
I'm a little bit more wary of our culture than I am this coronavirus.
You know, there was one time I was back in New York. I used to go back to New York quite often because I've been in the clothing industry for many years. And we were there for the day of the Puerto Rican parade. It was, I think it was sometime in June. And it was a beautiful day in New York. There were people everywhere. And we got up to a stoplight and we had to wait there. And the crowd started to push in. And I realized at that point, I kind of could feel a little bit of panic. I realized that we needed to get out of there and just kind of get to a place where it was calmer. And that was about the only time I really realized that crowds can get out of control. And that is why, and the people that foment people getting out of control should be called on the carpet. And I really felt that last night on the Democrat debate between Biden and Bernie. On one hand, they said we need to come together. And then the next thing that you hear is there's, you know, talking about fear and there's not enough tests and we're going into a very difficult time. And we need calmer voices. We need voices with a real plan on what we're going to do about everything that's going on out there. And this is a very dangerous time for people that love freedom and liberty, because what happens then is those that want to take away freedom and liberty use these crises to put forward rules, regulations, different things to take away our civil rights. And this is a time to be very vigilant on that. And so every day we still need to look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And if you want to see what the new Green Deal is like, or if you want to, you know, we're getting a little taste of Venezuela when you go down the toilet paper aisle right now. And what happens under socialism is there is nothing in the stores. And so we need to also be really grateful. I'd like to say thank a trucker out there right now. As I was coming in this morning, I saw a couple of trucks. And, you know, they take these trucks. They take our goods across the mountains. I've always been really appreciative of our trucking industry that gets our stores filled up. And when I was out yesterday, though, Steve, everybody was very, very, very courteous and kind. I saw smiles. And so I took a lot of heart in that.
I'm chuckling because on Saturday we did, like I said, we did venture out to the store and we had no need to go down the TP aisle, but my wife did anyway. And she's marveling at the emptiness of it all. And my comment to her was, welcome to Venezuela.
That's exactly like, that's right. Welcome to Venezuela. So we've got a big show planned for you today. The markets are really rocky again this morning. And what that can also mean is opportunity. So in just a minute or two, we'll talk with Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial. Because this may be a super opportunity for you to go in and refinance your house or buy a house right now. Call Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance. So we'll talk to him in just a couple of minutes. Sue Moore will be calling in with the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. We have a little bit of a reprieve right now because the legislature has taken an adjournment till the end of the month.
Yay.
Now, but I'm pretty sure they're going to extend it, and they're probably going to try to extend it to get all of the bad stuff passed that they want to get passed. My understanding is that has to be approved by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is appointed by the governor. We've had Democrat governors for quite some time, so it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that we've got a little bit of a reprieve, but we've got danger down the road, Steve.
What is it the doctors take, the oath, the Hippocratic Oath?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something in there first says, first, do no harm. I think politicians need to take the same oath, but, you know, in their time away, at least we can breathe easy. There won't be any harm done.
Well, and we need to actually kind of prepare some plans on what we're going to do about that. And then in the third and fourth segment, Dr. Brian Dmytrovic, you know him. He co-authored the book with Larry Kudlow. Larry Kudlow is Trump's economic advisor. And it is JFK and the Reagan Revolution, The Secret History of American Prosperity. And then also he's written Econoclast. And he is the guy to talk to about the economy because, you know, when you get right down to it, what was it? Was it Clinton? It's the economy, stupid? Well, you know, I think
yeah, Carvel,
that... Carvel. Was know, that Carvel said
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he made the statement.
Yeah. And it is the economy, and we are realizing that right now. We had been humming along, had been doing very well with the Trump policies, and this coronavirus, I really think that they've taken this and fomented this into trying to panic the markets, and so I can't wait to talk to Brian Dmytrovic about that. Before we get to Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial, I just want to say thank you to our team, to Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all of your good work, and to each of you listeners. You're valued, you're treasured. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And you know, somebody I haven't actually always said, and I need to make sure I always say that, is thank you to each of these sponsors. Lauren Levy, Karen Levine, Hooters Restaurant. Just go to my website and take a look at all those sponsors because I buy my airtime, which is great because I have full editorial control of guests and what we say. On the other hand, that means that we also have to make sure that we keep the lights on, and I am so grateful for each of the sponsors as well. Very quickly, our inspiration for today is Ronald Reagan. I thought that was appropriate since we're talking to Brian. He says, live simply, love generously, care deeply, speak kindly, and leave the rest to God. Is that not stay calm and carry on, Steve?
Yes, if only more people were aware of those words.
I know.
And we'll take them to heart, too.
Take them to heart. And then this isn't really that funny right now because there are times when government needs to step in a crisis. But what happens then is they forget to step back. And so Ronald Reagan, this is kind of funny. He said the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And then we're going to actually reschedule our salon series, The Three Punches to Knock Down Democrat Socialism. We're going to move that into June just because of all the nuts of stuff that's going on out there. So if you've already signed up, I'll reach out to you. But if you want to go ahead and get signed up for June, you can do that as well. So Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial. Every time there's kind of panic and things are crazy, there's also opportunity. So what do you see going on with these mortgage rates, Lauren?
You know, it's very interesting, Kim. I'm getting a lot of calls already since the Fed decided to, you know, do this on a Sunday. And
I don't know if people don't know what they got. They're taking the rate down to about zero,
right? They basically lowered by 1%. They lowered by 1% their overnight lending rate down to 0.25%. So what that really does is that affects the money that they lend to banks on an overnight basis. It also lowers the prime rate, which many home equity loans are tied to. It affects auto loans if people are going to get new auto loans. But the assumption is that people hear Fed takes rates down to zero, mortgage rates are going to zero, and the phone starts to ring. And that's not quite how it works. They don't exactly correlate. And so I've had to spend the first part of last night and today so far already, believe it or not, just texting and calling people, letting them know exactly that we don't know yet what this is going to mean for mortgage rates is the truth. We have to wait and see what happens in the market.
So while we're waiting and seeing, I know that you've been pre-qualifying people so that they're ready to roll when they figure out what they want to do exactly, right?
Yeah, that's right. We've been trying to take applications and making sure people are ready when these rates decide what they're going to do. You know, I know we don't have a lot of time, Kim, so I'll be as brief as I can, but the Fed lowered by a half maybe a week and a half ago on an emergency rate cut, and that actually forced rates higher. And the reason is just with all the stuff that's going on in the stock market where people are selling and going to cash, there just has not been any appetite for these mortgages on the back end in what's called the secondary market on Wall Street, the end buyer of these securities. So therefore, with no buyers, supply and demand has caused rates to go higher last week. Rates went back into the lower fours last week on 30-year fixed, even with all the stuff going on in the market. So we're hoping that with this new liquidity the Fed is injecting, that they help bolster that secondary market on the back end and provide liquidity. And hopefully that will bring rates down, if not right away in the next couple of weeks. It'll bring them back down to where they were just 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so it's Monday morning. And on this pre-qualification thing, so if somebody gets pre-qualified, how long is that good for?
It's honestly good unless something in their life changes. You know, there's no reason why it wouldn't be good unless they had an event that affected their credit score, like they missed a bill or if they lost their job. It would take something changing in their life. So the pre-qual is good. And then when they go to actually find a property or do a refi, then people like me will ask them, has anything changed in your life? And if they say no, then the pre-qual would still be good.
Okay. And what's that process? Do they call you? Is there something on your website? Or how do they start that whole process?
They can do either one. They can go to my website, which is www.polyfigroup.com, or they can call 303-880-8881. And I just will spend about 10 minutes tops on the phone getting all their basic information. And just from the conversation, I can usually tell pretty well if they're qualified and if they can get in a position to where I can call them back if rates do rebound down and it becomes a good time for them to look at refinancing.
And then one other thing, Lauren, you're not locked into one particular mortgage company, right? You can look at a variety of different mortgage companies and really kind of pick and choose what would work best for each individual person, right?
That's right. I'm a broker, so I have about 20 different lenders that I work with, and some of them I prefer over others, to be honest. But there are some that specialize in, let's say, FHA or first-time homebuyer loans or VA loans. Some of them do better with those. And so you're right. It just depends on the person's situation, and I just try to go where I can get them the best deal and where the process will go smooth.
Okay. Well, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial, that number is 303-880-8881, 303-880-8881. And so get pre-qualified so that it's not like when you go to get your mortgage that it's like you're trying to buy toilet paper over there at Costco right now. Get pre-qualified, prepare. If you prepare, then you're not panicking. So I would highly recommend people reach out to you, Lauren.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you know, let's do another update here in a couple of days. How's that sound?
That's fine.
Okay.
I'll be here.
Okay. Have a great day, Lauren Levy.
All right. You as well. Thanks, Kim.
Okay. We're going to go to break here in just a moment. But before we do that, Hooters restaurants, you know, things have changed significantly. Basketball season's been suspended. Hockey season's been suspended. March Madness has been canceled. I'm not quite sure why they canceled it. Seems to me like they could reschedule that as well. And but we need to make sure that we support all of these little businesses. And if you don't want to go out into public, if you want to stay home, stop by and pick up some Hooters wings and take them home, or you can have them delivered to your front door. But we need to be supporting all of these different businesses. I greatly appreciate it when you support the businesses that support me. So go to my website, look at my sponsors tab, just drop down on that. Each of my sponsors has a landing page there. And I'd greatly appreciate it if during this crazy time, if we make sure that we are supporting our small businesses like this. So Hooters Restaurants, they are a valued partner of mine. I'd highly recommend to pick up some wings and take them home, or stop by the restaurant and see what they have on the TVs these days. So this is Kim Munson. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Sue Moore is with the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. They're watching legislation down at the State House, and it'll be interesting to find out what she has to say with this adjournment till the end of March. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Before we get to Sue Moore, I just have to let you know Bob in Michigan, he responded, the hypocritical oath, Steve, the hypocritical oath. That's what they're doing down at the State House. And that's a great segue into Sue Moore here. Sue, we've got a little bit of a reprieve down at the State House with the adjournment, but the bad bills are all still out there. In fact, Patty, I had missed getting to this. The bill of the day was the Environmental Justice and Projects Increase Environmental Fines Act. And so that will increase fines for quote-unquote violations, environmental violations. And once again, this has bureaucrats deciding a variety of things, making it more expensive for energy. And so anyway, what's on your mind, Sue Moore?
Well, yeah, you mentioned it earlier in your program. I thought we'd start with just a little overview about what's going on down there.
Okay.
As of Saturday, the 2020 legislative session has completed day 67 of the 120 that they're required to meet. They originally scheduled to end on May 6th, but obviously they're going to shut down for 2 weeks due to the coronavirus. You know, we kind of think that's a good thing if we can slow the pace
exactly.
of bills coming in and bad, you know, damage being done. That's kind of a good thing. The question will be, when will it restart on 3/30, March 30th, as they're predicting? That would be day. Do they reset the clock at day 68, or are the two hiatus weeks included in the 120? So, as you mentioned, that'll be taken up by the Colorado Supreme Court. I don't know when that will be decided, but we'll stay tuned on that.
Okay.
For obvious reasons, then, the Republicans would like to shorten the session. The Democrats, who are in the majority, would like to extend it. There are 350-plus bills that are still in the hopper, so there's still a lot of damage to be done. We'll see what happens with that. The priority now, of course, will be the legislators required to pass the state budget before adjournment, so that needs to happen. They mentioned on Saturday the Joint Budget Committee, which is a committee of three Republicans and three Democrats, will continue to meet throughout this break.
Are they going to sit 6 feet apart, I wonder?
Probably. It will be a very large conference room. But the problem is a lot of the forecasting now is going to be out of whack. obviously, we just don't know what's going to happen with the economy at this point. So to try and predict what the budget, what it can cover and what it can't cover, is going to be a moving target. So, you know, God bless those people trying to you know, throw that dart against the wall.
And you said this has to be done before adjournment. So
it does. That's the one requirement. We have to pass a budget, and the budget has to be balanced. So, you know, who knows what that's going to look like. So obviously there are going to have to be some really profound cuts in most of the programs that the Democrats are proposing, and some may even have to be eliminated. So I guess you could call that good news, but in the end it's really not, because our economy is going to suffer. And some, you know, there, like I said, there are still some big things that need to be discussed that the Democrats really want to force through. One is family leave. The other is the one that we talked about last week, the public health insurance option. Those are very, very large budget options. So, those will require a lot out of the budget. So we don't know what those are going to wind up looking like. excuse me. So that's where we are right now. When the legislature reopens on March 30th, we expect bills will either come fast and furious, or hopefully everyone will keep their heads and they'll start prioritizing things that are really, really important to Coloradans and spend their time and energy on that. So having said that, the pace of bills last week didn't really slow, it did slow slightly, but it really didn't dry up, especially in terms of financial impact to Colorado taxpayers. So if you're ready, I'm ready to talk about a few of those.
Okay, and let's do speed legislation here, Sue Moore.
Okay, all right, here we go. First one is kind of a simple one, Senate Bill 2194. It's titled Brew Pub Retail Sales. And essentially it just says that if you own, you know, one or more brew pubs, actually if you own multiple brew pubs, you can sell your wares for personal consumption, or people who want to take those off premises as long as they're in sealed containers. Kind of a no-brainer. It obviously lowers barrier to free market, so we support that bill. That won't have a whole lot of impact, but at least it's actually it's a bipartisan sponsored bill, so that's not surprising.
Okay.
The Senate Bill 193, the creation of the Financial Empowerment Office. It creates a financial empowerment office within the Department of Law in order to grow the financial resilience and well-being of Coloradans through specified community-derived goals and strategies. That's a lot of words, doesn't really have a lot of meaning. Basically, what they want to do is create a fund of low-cost credit-building loans that would go out to small community organizations, small businesses, and underserved communities. But the upshot is that it actually will compete with little community banks.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it, you know, it's government force, you know, trying to compete with free markets, and obviously we oppose that bill. And it also creates a fund of government-backed loans. So this is actually funded with taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. So that's really not fair competition either.
Right.
So we oppose that one as well. There's kind of a similar bill, Senate Bill 200. It's the implementation of the Colorado Secure Savings Program. Now, this was put into motion last year when the General Assembly created the Colorado Secure Savings Board in the Office of the State Treasurer, and it creates a state-facilitated automatic enrollment individual, IRA account. So it's basically a state version of Social Security. It's a mandated program. Forced retirement savings. It actually sets penalties for employers who don't comply with this. So it's requiring employers, and they're really targeting small businesses, to provide some kind of a forced savings account that would be a payroll deduction. Now, you know, we would love for people to be saving more money for retirement. We think that's a worthy goal. However, a mandated forced retirement savings program, it doesn't take into account any family priorities, family needs. Maybe you have a sick child. It will take money out of your payroll and put it into this account for your benefit. But some people can't afford that. Businesses can't afford that. Some businesses can't afford to do that. And it also creates penalties. It's a mandate. It's the heavy hand of government trying to force people and there are alternatives. People always have the option of putting money into an IRA or a savings account. So it really, we really, really, really dislike this bill.
Does the employer have to put money in on this?
They do not, but they do have to do the payroll.
Right. So it costs them to do that?
Exactly. Yeah, just to administrate this thing. Mm-hmm. So, administer this thing. So, yeah, that's a sneaky bill. Good intentions. Unintended consequences, we believe.
So let's do one more. How's that sound?
Okay, this one's kind of a biggie, but I'll see if I can zip through it quickly. It's going to have a big impact. It creates the Air Quality Enterprise. It's Senate Bill 204, Additional Resources to Protect Air Quality. It's a very broad reaching bill, and it really has very little or no cost containment. So when you call this the Air Quality Enterprise, we understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to get around Tabor.
Oh.
So they're saying, no, this isn't a tax. It's an enterprise. It's going to be run by the government, but it's really not a tax. You know, it'll be funded by fees. However, it creates this giant bureaucracy within the government that has a board of directors. Obviously, they're all appointed by the governor. It creates basically a blank check to create this office that will cover its. Excuse me, I'm kind of flipping around here. They want to measure air quality in all parts of the city, and then they want to create penalties for businesses that are violating those air qualities. So the long and short of it is they can basically charge whatever fees or penalties they want to do this. There are no limits to that.
Wow.
It requires startup costs that will come from the general fund, so that will obviously squeeze funds that would go to other purposes. So, so that's the long and short of that bill.
Wow.
It's got broad-reaching effect and very little control on it.
Okay. Sue Moore, how can people get more information on this, the work that you're doing? And they need to, over these next 2 weeks, you need to be doing your homework and so that we have some time to reach out to try to slow this kind of stuff down. And so how can people get more information on this?
Exactly. You can go to our website. It's rlcco.org. That lists all the bills, the most recent bills that we looked at this week, as well as the entire slate of bills, the some 370 that we've looked at and rated. And that will also take you to our Liberty Scorecard. So if you're interested to know how your particular legislators are doing, we've compared their votes with whether or not we support or oppose a bill. Then we've come up with a report card, you could say. It lists all the votes that they've taken, whether or not we agree with them or not, and then a final score from, 0 to 100. We actually have three legislators right now in the A range, which is really good. We have a lot in the D and too many to count in the F range. So if you want to see how your legislator is doing, go to our Liberty Scorecard, and that can be found at our website, rlcco.org.
Okay, Sue Moore, thank you so much for the good work of you and your team, and we will talk to you next Monday morning.
Sounds good. Thanks, Kim.
Okay, let's jump over here. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. You're going to be in studio tomorrow, and I think that's so appropriate. McBride and St. Patrick's Day. I think that'll be great, Jason.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to bring us a beer, but with the way things are going, maybe I'll need something stronger.
Maybe. So, what are you seeing with the markets this morning?
It's going to be another bloodbath, at least on the open, Kim. Right now, the futures on the Dow are down 1,041, but that's like the lock limit. They can't show lower than that. It's about 4.5%. I'm taking a peek at some of the big stocks that are very liquid that trade in the pre-market, and I'm seeing prices down between 10 to 12%. So, we could see another couple thousand down early in the day. I don't know if we get a bounce back. Recently, it's just kind of been, down 1,000 one day, up 1,000 the next, down 2,000, up 2,000. And it's interesting as well, Kim, that you remember we had talked about the statistic that there had been 1.1 billion mentions of this coronavirus in the media just since it started,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
Well, the same site that I was getting that info from now says it's 2.1 billion.
Within just that amount of time, huh?
Yeah, that is pretty quick. So, again, it's not really surprising that we're seeing the hysteria that we're seeing, and the market is reacting to it as well. As Lauren talked about, the Fed did cut the interest rates by a full percentage, and the market is still down this morning. Well, you know, an interest rate cut is not going to, you know, stem the hysteria that we right. see right now. But what it does is it offers more liquidity to the banks right now, which, you know, may allow them to offer better rates on loans and all that type of thing for people that are thinking about doing that if they're not freaking out right now. But I think it's designed to give confidence that the banks are there, standing ready, the Fed's behind them, that we're not going to get a run on the banks or, you know, some kind of failure in the banking system. But that's not going to fix the market instantaneously, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I just wish I would have bought the company that has Charmin toilet paper before this whole thing started.
Well, I think that's Johnson & Johnson. Let's take a look at what a good investor you are. Hold on. Well, I'm glad you didn't. Johnson & Johnson, if I'm right, if they make Charmin, it was at like 155 and closed on Friday at 135, so it's gone down less than a lot of things, but you still would have been getting beat up, Kim.
Okay, well then, I guess it's just as well. So, Jason, I'm excited you're going to be in studio tomorrow, and we'll go through a whole bunch of great information. And you can reach Jason at airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com. That's our landing page together, and you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management highly recommend that people sit down with you guys and do a discovery session.
All right, I'll be there with my hazmat suit on.
Sounds great. Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, I cannot wait to talk with Dr. Brian Dimitrovic. He is an economic historian. He's written a book with Larry Kudlow, JFK and Reagan, and the JFK and Reagan Revolution, The Secret History of American Prosperity, as well as the book Econoclast. And he is the guy to talk to today with all this craziness going on in the economy. So this is Kim Munson. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thrilled to have on the line with me Dr. Brian Dimitrovic. He is a economic historian, and we are creating history right now, Brian.
That's right, Kim. We sure are.
So, what do you see? I've been thinking all weekend about I can't wait to hear what you have to tell us.
Yeah, sure. So the markets are selling off. We're in a bear market. I'm not particularly surprised about that for a couple of reasons. And the first is that stocks weren't that high to begin with the Dow at 29,000. That represents a peak-to-peak increase over the previous 20 years of under 5% since the year 2000. And since the 2007 peak, only about 5.5%, 5.7%. Those aren't real bull markets. Real bull markets see peaks to peaks at 8 to 10% over the long term. So I think the market already had priced in a lot of weakness about all the bad economic policy we've had in the 2000s. So it's another wake-up call. We're going to have really good economic policy, and if we did, we'd see a real bull market for once.
Okay, so, you know, we are realizing that we have vulnerabilities. Clearly, the manufacturing, so much manufacturing has gone to China. And then it's like, why is that? And we go back to policy. In a way, it's kind of like the coronavirus of policy that we're seeing. And we're seeing politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties kind of jumping into this panic to prepare to put more, I'm talking particularly here in Colorado, more very detrimental policies out there. And why was manufacturing moving offshore? Why did we decimate many of our small towns that had manufacturing policies? It's because I think labor got too expensive.
Well, yeah, if labor's been too expensive, and I think it has been too expensive, we can look at all the taxes we put upon labor. I mean, we have that Social Security tax. There it is, 15%, which, whatever, if the labor and management want to engage in an employment contract, you have to add on 15% in the Social Security taxes. Thanks a lot. So that's going to, you know, ship a lot of labor overseas. This stuff, say, President Andrew says that Amazon doesn't pay any taxes. They pay all the Social Security taxes, really arguably all the income taxes, too, on their employment base, because otherwise where else does the money come from but the top line of the business? So, yeah, I mean, that's not even to take into account regulation. We have a lot of taxes on labor. And then on the capital side, I mean, you can't hire labor without capital. We've raised the capital gains tax under Obama. We did, and we're not indexing it for inflation. It's up around 28% or something like that in some cases now. It's too high. So if you have high labor and capital taxes, you can say bye-bye to employment contracts in this country.
Right, and that's what has happened. And now we see this vulnerability of, you know, all of these products that are manufactured in China. And I'm not sure that everyday hardworking people have correlated all of this bad policy with what is causing kind of this panic out there right now. But I think it's important to try to, you know, connect the dots for them, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, if there are problems with supply chain somewhere in the economy, China, wherever, I mean, business will solve that in no time flat. The underlying structure of how much it costs to have labor or have capital or to keep it given regulation is the most important thing. I don't think we really need to worry at all about, like, how business makes a million private decisions about how to source their supply chains. If we have good policy here, that sourcing will be very good for us in the short, medium, and long term.
Well, I really felt the Trump administration has been working to get to better policy. You know, when Trump came in, he said, if for every new regulation, we need to get rid of two. And so I felt that we were really, you know, moving in the right direction. The market typically, you know, the market does not like uncertainty. And it looked to me like it was saying, hey, we look like we like what's going to be happening in the future. And then this whole coronavirus thing happened. And as Jason McBride just mentioned, I think the narrative is being pushed somewhat by the media, because it's all that people hear. And last night when I watched Bernie and Biden, on one hand, they said we need to come together. And then they immediately went into, I felt, fear-mongering.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that we missed the fourth leg of the bull market. I mean, bull markets have to have these legs, and the strongest are the third and fourth, and we had a strong third leg. I thought the fourth leg would have taken us to 40,000. But fourth legs of bull markets usually happen when there is a subsequent doubling down on a beneficial policy change. Reagan cut taxes in 1981, did even more in 1986. That is, in fact, what the Trump administration was planning. But, I mean, once Joe Biden became a presumptive nominee, the chances of a Democratic victory in November skyrocketed, actually, in February. So the market's not going to like that, because the whole bull market and fourth leg was premised on, you know, some kind of furtherance of the 2017 tax cut.
So you feel that Biden is a real credible contender, probably particularly after this whole coronavirus thing, huh?
Well, I won't say that necessarily. I will say that when he roared back, where was it, South Carolina or wherever, this is, you know, pre-virus stuff in the United States, that's when the market started to waver. But everyone was talking about it. It was an open secret. And also that his main opponent was Bernie. I mean, we've been done polling on Biden for years in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan, places that were keystones to Trump's victory. And there, you know, there could be a kind of atavistic interest in that candidacy there, much more than one of the other rubber chickens that the Democrats have been nominating and considering nominating. So, yeah, I think the market took much more seriously at least the possibility that this Democrat could win in November, and that was the peak of the market.
Okay, what about the whole coronavirus thing? What it looks like we are creating some significant damage to our economy. You look out in California shutting down, you know, different little businesses. Little businesses are on really tight margins. I mean, I'm concerned about this, Brian.
Yeah, sure. The economic shutdown is economic shutdown. I mean, that's all the things that implies in terms of, you know, the absence of cash flow, can't make payroll, all that stuff. As they say, never let a crisis go to waste. We've seen a lot of spontaneous order. I mean, a lot of spontaneous action of people just all over the country, presumably the world, doing all sorts of things to mitigate this situation. If, for once, we would let that particular process play out, I think actually that would be the single most bullish thing for the markets and the economy that we could possibly conceive of. Because if finally there were an experiment where we said, we're going to see what happens when the government steps back and just lets everyone surge into the problem, that is going to lead to such a confidence in the American economy's ability to deliver that I think we can finally resume that bull market big time once again.
So would you say that you are optimistic? I mean, I know that's a tough word to say this morning, but you're giving me hope.
Well, yeah. Well, first of all, just in terms of simple stocks, one is never optimistic in a bull market until everyone is pessimistic. And that's Laszlo Gray, you always talk about that. A bull market never ends until everyone says dire things. That's actually a requirement for a bear market to end. So if there's any optimism at all, bear markets don't end. They only end when everyone's pessimistic, and that's the bottom. No, I do actually think, you know, given our history of pandemics going back over the entirety of human history, I think the United States in particular is yearning for a crisis, kind of subliminally, kind of subconsciously, yearning for a crisis in which the government lets the people deal with it. And we're actually witnessing it with our own eyes in so many cases. And that solution, whatever it is, whatever that amorphously arrived at solution is, will be so much better than anything the central planners could come up with. And that's in terms of everything, epidemiology, infectious diseases, you name it. I mean, we have incredible resources in our private sector, way more than in the government, and they could be optimally delivered so much better through spontaneous order.
Okay, let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Dr. Brian Dmytrovic. He's written the book with Larry Kudlow, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, The Secret History of American Prosperity, as well as Econoclast. And then your most recent piece over at Forbes is, you said, what Larry Kudlow learned from JFK on economic policy as crisis looms. Mm-hmm. Excellent piece there. So let's go to break. I want to ask you, Brian, though, about this story out there on these quote-unquote hoarders. These people, I have actually found it somewhat entrepreneurial that there's folks that went out and bought hand sanitizer and, you know, all this different stuff, and then they were going to sell it on eBay or Amazon at whatever the market price would pay them, and they are being really chastised on it. I kind of felt it was very entrepreneurial. So we're going to go to break. I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
Sure.
We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. kim@kimmunson.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. This show is replayed every evening from 10 to 11 p.m. right here on KLZ 560. And we have our show recaps with the podcast on the website within basically within the day. Brian Dimitrovic, you are an economic historian. You've written an important book with Larry Kudlow, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, The Secret History of American Prosperity, as well as Iconoclasts. And this is such an interesting piece that you just recently published in Forbes. And that is, let's see, here's the title, What Larry Kudlow Learned from JFK on Economic Policy as Crisis Looms. Really an interesting piece. Highly recommend that people check that out. But, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about hoarders, and I think there's hoarders, and then I think there's some people that saw an opportunity, and they're not hoarding because they're willing to sell their product at what the market would bear, but they're kind of getting chastised. And I think I'm kind of thinking it was very, very creative. What do you think?
Well, I thought that the fellow in Tennessee was wonderful, and I actually give the New York Times a thimble full of credit for running the story on this guy. The funny thing about him is he wasn't even a price gouger. I mean, he wasn't selling much above his cost. I mean, he had a healthy little margin there, but his own costs because of the crisis had gone way up. First of all, he had to pay Amazon a special charge for shipping something that contained alcohol. And number two, he has a lot of legwork to run through to ship every package. So when you throw those costs in, his margins were only like 100% or something, you know, which in this kind of business isn't that high. And he was making nice money. It is simply appalling that there was any opposition to that, particularly at the official level. I mean, that person was doing exactly what needed to be done in time of crisis.
But and compare that to a hoarder. And in fact, I saw a funny meme. It said, you know, it had a shopping cart, looked like it was at Costco, with, you know, toilet paper and, you know, just overflowing. And it said, these are the same people that want to say how much ammo a person can buy. And I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, free markets, we should just kind of stay out of everybody else's business. But there's a difference between, I think, hoarding and being entrepreneurial. So I don't think that guy's really a hoarder. But now hoarding, I'm a little concerned about that, because I think that's where all the panic comes in, and I think that's what's really making the supply chains be a little wonky.
Yeah, hoarding. What, there were those two guys in New York City back 100 years ago, whatever, that killed themselves in their apartment because they hoarded so much stuff. It all fell on them eventually, and they weren't discovered for a couple weeks. I forget their name. They were in East Harlem back in the old days. So people are hoarding non-perishable goods. I'll say this about the hand sanitizer case. I mean, you know, all these infectious disease people are telling us, you know, that hand sanitizer is actually kind of one of the worst ways that you can wash your hands. You know, so soap and water is much better. So when you have somebody like that who's selling hand sanitizer, he's actually taking money from people who don't know what to do with it. They should be out buying soap. And that actually is an indication of efficiency in the market. People who don't know what they're doing are getting rid of their financial resources and giving it to somebody else. That actually isn't a marker of efficiency. And people are hoarding toilet paper. Yeah, that's okay. I mean, that's not really that much of a necessity. So I don't think it's anything to worry about. You know, food supply, that's something to worry about. And, you know, that's doing fine. So I can't imagine that any of the normal processes of the market can't work this out just fine.
So let's move over to, I talked a little bit about it in the first segment, the trucking industry. You know, I think that if there's any kind of a wake-up call during this crisis, is how grateful we should be for when we go into the market and they have what we want. And typically, many times when I would go to the grocery store in the past, I would say thank you for having everything that I needed and wanted. And sometimes I didn't even know I needed or wanted it. Thank you. And the trucking industry, we've really taken them for granted. You know, and as I was driving over, a couple of trucks went by. I mean, these men and women are out there moving goods across the country so that people can go to the market and buy what they need. And we need to say thank you. And I think I saw that the Trump administration is relaxing some of the rules and regulations on the trucking industry so that they can be more efficient. It's kind of like, and maybe we should keep that there. But what's your thoughts on that, Brian?
Yeah, I'm gonna shock you here. I'm actually saying we owe a nod of thanks to Jimmy Carter. And I say that in all seriousness, actually. It was Jimmy Carter who started the deregulation of trucking back in the 1970s on sentiments very similar to ours that we just expressed right here. So, yeah, trucking has been deregulated, and it's just cruising. I just recently read the obituary of Whitney McMillan, who died at 90 last week, and he was the longtime CEO of Cargill, the largest private corporation in the United States and the biggest producer of food, I think, in the world at this point. And here's somebody nobody ever heard of. And I think that family has spawned something like 75 billionaires. So, wow. Right, these incredible executive heroes have made us not even think about our food supply over the last 50 years, including right now. And his own life story was really just kind of amazing about how dedicated he was to this problem of the food supply for the nation and the world. So, yeah, just let those people do what they're doing. Just get them out of the way, and the spontaneous order will just smother this problem and smother it until it has to go somewhere else.
So, Brian Dmytryk, let's move over here to Colorado. I know that you were the visiting professor of thought and conservative policy up at CU 1 year, but you were in Texas now. But we have, from an energy standpoint, a couple of things that are subtle. People aren't, they've taken it for granted that, you know, the trucks, you know, deliver, you know, the products to the market. But we have something that's going to be a biodiesel mandate, and that is going to increase costs for our trucking industry. And is government coming in and virtue signaling? And ultimately, when you see this whole panic going on, I don't think people really care whether or not, you know, the trucks brought it with biodiesel or how it got there. They just want it to get to the market. And we need to get out of the way so that that can happen.
That's just sad to hear, Kim. I mean, it's just, you know, that's what's called fecklessness. I mean, that's people who are faced with doing serious things, let's say these legislators, the advocates of this bill, and they do unserious things. And at a serious time, it's important to do serious things, not to act like a fool. So if people are talking about global warming and biodiesel, and that's just sad. So one would hope that if the government can really lay off in this crisis, we can come to a new dawn of enlightenment about how well the private sector can act on its own. I know here in Houston, Texas, where I live, during the Hurricane Harvey, which was so tremendous, horrible, in 2017, government didn't do anything. Nobody talks about that, but the mayor of Houston said, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to order evacuation. And a spontaneous order was incredible, especially from the private firms. So if we do that right now, you know, we're going to win.
Well, and compare that with Katrina. When everybody looked to government to take care of them, you know, the Superdome was a disaster. And so that is the thing, though, that I'm concerned about, is when things happen, you have people that sometimes clamor for somebody should do something, government should do something. And I feel that what I saw with Biden and Bernie last night is they were really playing into that narrative.
Yeah, I haven't watched the Muppet Show since the 1970s, I guess. So I didn't tune in last night, since I'd seen it when I was a little kid. They're the judges. That mayor of Houston, by the way, Sylvester Turner, was just reelected last December, and his opponents just hammered away. You didn't order evacuations, you didn't do anything. And the electorate just said, yeah, thanks, he gets another term. So I think there's a very deep-seated desire in this country for government to stop, A, treating us like babies, and B, stop acting like they're the smartest guy in the room. And I think this crisis in particular is really revealing those preferences, and it would be great if we really faced them and reacted appropriately.
Okay, Brian Dmytryk, we have just a couple of minutes. What are the final thoughts that you would like to leave with our listeners on this Monday morning, as it looks like the markets are going to be very volatile again? Many people have a little knot in their stomach. What would you say to them?
Every long-term economic crisis we have had in modern times, Great Depression, 1970s, 2001, 2008, early 1980s, every single one has been caused by the government's response to the crisis. Not the crisis itself, but the government's response. The response caused the Great Depression. The response caused 2008 and all that. So we are in the proving ground once again. We have a little crisis here. It's a crisis, real one. If the government can respond by letting spontaneous order run, we'll sail. If it responds by enhancing government, like Obama did, well, then we're in trouble. So choice is ours right now.
Okay, and what do you think Trump's going to do?
Well, I know that a lot of people are saying just this to Trump. So I actually would sort of prefer that my good friend Arthur Laffer, and my boss actually, that you know maybe his suggestion be a little reconsidered about the Social Security tax cut. If there would be any tax cut, I'd want it to be the long-term nature, like capital gains rate. I think, you know, if people can provide liquidity on good collateral and all that stuff, that's fine. But just let the spontaneous order run. Let the regulations drop. If we do that, especially for the long term, then you're going to have a great recovery.
Okay. And so this could be a time of great opportunity. And so I would recommend that people stay calm, carry on, limit your exposure to television and social media, read a great book, be industrious. We are Americans. We stand on the shoulders of giants. Brian Dimitrovic, I think we need to start acting like it.
Great, Kim. Great talking to you.
Good to talk to you. We'll talk to you again soon. Dr. Brian Dimitrovic, I so appreciate you.
Sure thing, Kim.
Okay, our quote for today is Ronald Reagan. He said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.